This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Yeah, amidst all the pre-season talk of unprecedented unpredictability in the Premier League this year, Manchester United and Tottenham Hotspur both handily beaten and Arsenal win comfortably. The Premier League is back, baby. It's a Premier League special performance rankings. Imminently, Danny Kilpatrick will be live on the line to talk about Spurs, their 3-0 defeat away to Keith Andrews' Brentford. It could have been a lot worse, to be fair. Andy Mitten will then be on to talk Hull City 2, Manchester United 0, a disastrous start to the campaign from Michael Carrick. And then we'll finish the show in-house, and you'll see why in just a moment. Very welcome. It's Monday, the 24th of August. Breakfast at offtheball.com is where you'll get us on email. 0879-180-180 is the WhatsApp. And if you want to watch us on YouTube, type in Off The Ball, you'll see that we're live. End of call, good morning.
Good morning.
Matthew Brennan, hello.
Hello, Colin.
Keith Tracy and Keith Monday, hello.
Hello, good morning. Well? How are we?
Loads to discuss from a very action-packed first weekend in the Premier League. There were, of course, a few shocks along the way, even if they were predictable. About yesterday alone, Aston Villa losing 4-0 away to Brighton, 4-0 down, about a half an hour. A man down as well, Joe Gomez, on his debut. Manchester City leaving it late against Bournemouth, 2-1. Dominic Szoboszlai with a nerveless, classy penalty in a big day in the Kevin Keegan tribute, Newcastle 2, Liverpool 2. But how about Irish representation in the Premier League? We talked about it worryingly so 2 weeks ago. We talked about it again last week at a whole show. Two mornings in a row dedicated with Finney Perth. And then you have John Egan. They're talking about him on TNT Sport for player of the match in his performance for Hull against Man United. You have Darragh O'Shea playing for Ipswich in their 2-1 victory over Sunderland. And then in the dugout, Keith Andrews, helped by Damien Duff, masterminding another comfortable victory.
Nathan Collins on the pitch, of course, too. Nathan
Collins there, yeah. Jacob Bryan, part of a winning side, but didn't make it off the bench. But still, yeah, not bad.
A little bit worrying that he's not there. It was Rawl started as a right back. But I look at, we have a couple of heads knocking around in the Premier League, but they're all defenders. I think we all know we've a half decent defence and a really good goalkeeper, but midfield is where we struggle. And I'm not hearing many names starting in the Premier League that are midfielders or attacking midfielders or creative midfielders. So I still find it quite hard to get two up, and
I'll take it all back.
Yeah. Oh, well, John Egan's brilliant, isn't he? I mean, there was a time where he was struggling for the club.
It's amazing.
It's brilliant to see him doing what he's doing.
There was a picture of him a few years ago when he was at Old Trafford watching Manchester United. He was just in the front row as a fan. Yeah. I think he was after he left Sheffield United.
Given how much he's done in his career up to that point, would have been very easy to go, do you know what, I'm going to have enough here. But to double down and go, do you know what, I'm going to work hard, I'm going to get myself back to the levels I need to be at, and to be playing back in the Premier League at 33, I think he is now.
Yeah, it's 33.
And with Jake O'Brien, I know it's only one game, but if he stays out of that starting 11 for Everton, Egan could find himself back in an Ireland jersey as a starter, I mean.
I played three centre-halves, and he was the only one who stayed on the whole game, and his two centre-half buddies both scored.
Yeah.
Semi Ejaia and Nobel Mendy on his debut.
Nobel Mendy, one of the keys to the Troy Parrott deal. Strangely enough, was at Real Betis before, and they had a bit of a sell-on clause on him, because obviously he'd moved to Vallecano, and Betis got about 8 million in return of him going to Hull for 15 or 16. But the John Egan stuff is brilliant. Like, he obviously was in the Premier League with Sheffield United and was very good. And that Chris Wilder team, when they sort of had the marauding centre-halves.
Overlapping centre-halves, remember that?
Crazy,
he was manager of the year at one point. Chris Wilder was looking so good for him.
I think people copped on to it then, didn't you?
Like, you can't, like,
centre-halves are overlapping here.
Yeah. Not a bad legacy though, isn't it?
No.
That you created.
We're still talking about it now.
There you go.
Actually, he's back there now, he's doing alright. But yeah, Egan was at Burnley and had some really bad injury troubles. I think he played 5 or 6 times for them. And then obviously ended up at Hull, who were relegation fodder in the Championship, let alone relegation fodder in the Premier League now.
XG had them fourth bottom in the Championship.
He was being linked with West Ham last January, and Sergei Yakirovich was asked about John Egan and whether, you know, he might make a late move and how much of a loss that would be. And Yakirovich essentially said, if you would have said to me at the start of this season, would John Egan be a key cog in this team for me, I would have kind of laughed at you. But here we are. He's been unbelievable. Yeah. He's been brilliant. And look at him now. He's. Mm-hmm. I thought he should have got man the match. I mean, no, that's all. That all that stuff is sort of, you know, is good for us to talk about. Probably doesn't really matter to the rest of them. But I thought he was phenomenal. Mm.
Did you see his warm up beforehand, Gaelic football style?
Going to work on the pickup.
Well, see, I was going to bring this up. He got a lot of credit for this. Yeah. He missed the pickup.
He did. He got it again though. Went again.
Yeah. And he also dropped a short.
I think he didn't mean that. He meant to put it into the goal. Yeah. I mean, put it below the bar. It was nice anyway. Nice throwback. Mm. Anyway, it is a Premier League special performance rankings. I suppose, Enda, we should get stuck into them.
Let's do it.
And now, Asula has been released right through the middle. He's running at Van Dijk. And Jacquet plays it then out to Alanga. Alanga storming into the box. And he scored for Newcastle United in front of the Gallo Gate, which goes absolutely wild inside 5 minutes.
Gakpo in the middle again. Hits a shot. And it's into the back of the net. What a goal from Cody Gakpo. It's a daisy cutter. It's an equaliser in the 55th minute. Newcastle 1, Liverpool 1.
To Johan Wissa. Oh, Wissa goes brilliantly there to get away from two red shirts. He's going through the middle here. He's got support on the outside from Joe Willock. Joe Willock just about controls it. Hits a shot. Hits a goal. It's a second goal for Newcastle. And it's a super sub. Joe Willock, who comes off the bench to score the goal to put his team back in. Szoboszlai looks to his left. Takes a run. And he's put it into the top corner. And Newcastle have snatched the draw from the jaws of victory here at St. James's Park on the opening day of the Premier League season. And that long 11-year wait to beat Liverpool in the Premier League will continue.
Wait, the performance rankings thing there.
That's a new one.
Oh, okay.
That's a new one. Stephen Doyle on commentary there at the Liverpool-Newcastle game yesterday. This is the performance rankings. And it's the first week of the Premier League, so that's why we have a Premier League comms thing as opposed to the performance ranking sting column. We had goals, we had last-minute drama, we had tetchy interviews, and earlier than normal, we had Manchester United's season derailing. The midfield is finally fixed, that's what the Man United fans said. Ahead of the match, only for Yuri Tillemans and Andre Santos to be glided past by 30-year-old Ollie McBurnie. Who could have seen this coming? It's not like Man United have been in a situation before where a club legend comes in on an interim basis, does well, and before it all comes crumbling down as a permanent boss. The day for Man United was summed up by the stadium announcer telling the fans with a little hint of glee in his voice, it must be said, that their trains back to Manchester had been cancelled and that a very expensive taxi is in their future. And also summed up by the Hull City fans doing little tiger roars. Did you see that?
You're getting mauled by the tigers.
Mauled by the tigers.
They look like cubs.
Yeah. I have to say, my head would be on the moon if I was a Man United supporter and somebody started mauling me like a tiger.
That's why they do it. Because they did it initially with the chant, you're getting mauled by the tigers. And then they got a lot of stick for it because it's like, it's a bit pathetic. But
they decided to do this, but it's just to rattle you,
you know, because if you're after losing to this team who like aren't that good as well, you know, you will be pretty
it rattles you in the opposite way intended though.
Doesn't strike fear into you or anything like that.
I was taking a corner once and you know you get an awful lot of abuse and a lot of it just goes over your head, but I got the Tracy is a girl's name that stood out and he's like, that's rattled me in a way that wasn't expecting.
Yeah, it made to thinker.
Man United, start off the season, 12:30 kickoff, always a dangerous one. 2-0 loss to newly promoted Hull side. A newly promoted Hull side that pretty much everyone predicted to go down. Mm-hmm. Colm, what happened? What happened here to Manchester United?
Same thing that always happens, isn't it? Bruno Fernandes said it afterwards. So we keep doing this away from home. It's a brand new season. People aren't expecting it. The expectations are higher as a result. Michael Carrick says, don't worry, relax. It's only the first game. I don't know about that.
Nah. Not for me, either. I think, you know, I'm not... It's the first game in the season. You don't want to overanalyze it. But if I was to sum up the game in a sentence, I would say Hull wanted it more. And you shouldn't be outfought by any team in the Premier League, especially if you're Manchester United. And I'm listening to certain people say, I think United think they're better than what they are. And I'm not talking about the individual players. I'm talking about them as a team turning up the hole and thinking, oh, well, we're United. We're here now. We'll beat this. You have to outwork them. I mean, look at Ollie McBurnie's work rate to everybody else's work rate in a Manchester United jersey. If you don't defend balls into your own box well, you're going to definitely struggle. And it's very interesting to look at Manchester United under Carrick with Champions League football. You start a game every 3 days. How are they going to get on? You can start talking about the tactical side of the European stuff, but the basics of the game, Manchester United aren't outworking teams or out-fighting teams, and no passion, no desire, I believe Bruno Fernandes said. And you're saying stuff like that after 90 minutes of football, it's a little bit worrying, but that team will get an awful lot better. I think Cunha on the left and Mbeumo up as a centre forward, Fernandes in the 10 and Amad Diallo on the right is their best front four. But I think there's an awful lot of, I wouldn't say dead weight, but people I'm just not convinced of at Manchester United. I mean, Andre Santos, I think, is an okay signing. He's played 27 games for Chelsea last season. Before that was Strasbourg. So he's not really a Premier League proven player. 27 games is not enough for me to say he'll come in at United and he'll hit the ground running and everything will be rosy in the garden. Belhiba, done well at Brighton. Is he the next level Manchester United Champions League player? Remains to be seen. So there's still question marks. Tielemans at Aston Villa for Belgium, very good player. Is he a Manchester United player? I'm not too sure, but we're talking about individuals being very talented, and is there talent enough to get them at Manchester United? Is their work rate enough is the big one for me. And Fernandes is saying we can't keep the ball, the work rate, the passion. Well, you're in the engine room. You're not exactly leading by example. I mean, I'm not looking at Fernandes thinking, why aren't people doing what he's doing? I know he's not, but when he talks, it seems to me like he's distanced himself from the comment, like, oh, they're not doing it. Mm. They have no passion. And I know he's not saying they, but he's not exactly saying we have no passion either. I feel like he's trying to distance himself from it. And I don't know. I think United are a couple of bodies off to be able to compete in the Champions League and probably finish within the Champions League places again. But again, you don't want to over-analyse the first 90 minutes of the season.
I see what they're trying to do. You know, they started with the forwards last year. They got three new forwards in. They're doing the midfield this year. Three new midfielders in if Belhiba goes through. And then you'd say, well, next year they'll work on the defence. That defence has been there a long time.
Mm.
And it's just uninspiring. And I'd say it's very inviting to the opposition. Funny enough, Harry Maguire was United's most dangerous attacker in the second half.
Yeah.
Max Rashford is okay when he came on. His first game for United since December 2024. New shirt number 9. But in the last 10 minutes, plus 6 minutes stoppage time, I don't know where they got that from.
Every other game all weekend only had 3 or 4. It seems as though that's the thing they're trying to do. The game you were on yesterday, commentary, only had 3 minutes at the end.
And there was 4 or 5 substitutions, a couple of goals, and you just said, 3 minutes will do. Mm.
So in the last 16 minutes all in, Maguire had a shot with his left foot.
Yeah.
Straight at their new goalkeeper, Salakis, who we got from Olympiacos. And then Bruno Fernandes had a cross shot. That was it?
Yeah.
United had
39 crosses.
One successful dribble in the first half.
They looked incredible.
That's just not good enough for a top level Premier League side.
Yeah.
Keith mentioned passion there. Michael Carrick was asked after the game by Jan Agafjordov here.
A friend.
Were they missing passion? Were they missing the passion that Manchester United players should have in that first half?
I guess in management, there are so many buzzwords hanging around, like passion, intensity, and go for it. But would you accept that there was a lack of passion in the first half?
Oh, come on, that's ridiculous.
That's not what you would assess it.
You played football.
Yeah.
You understand. Like, that's a ridiculous thing to say. Just because you get beat doesn't mean you don't care about it.
No, I'm not saying that you cared about it. I think that the thing that get over from, if you look at it, because they came with passion, that's what I mean. And I understand that you care about it, but would you accept that they took you on that front, so to say?
No. The game was, the two goals came from set plays. Other than that, we had opportunities. That was where the game was. So I don't think it was passion or anything to do with that. I think it was just their moments that made the difference in the game.
He did interestingly say, Carrick as well, that they have a problem playing against different systems. He threw that in the middle of one of his post-match interviews, and he said, we will resolve it.
They looked very, very one-dimensional as well. There didn't seem to be I assumed they had a plan A for when the game was at 0-0, but as soon as they went behind, it seemed as though the plan was, let's just loft as many crosses into the box as we can. They had 39 crosses, 34 from open play, which is the most in any Premier League game since 2018. You can, of course, have success playing like that, but it's far more difficult to have success playing like that when you've got a team defending with three absolute monsters in the box, in Ajay, in Mendy, in John Egan, and you haven't got a striker on the pitch until Šeško comes on for the last 25 minutes or so. So I think that feeds into his point about them struggling against systems, and I think that is probably indicative of what Bruno had to say too.
Yeah.
In that we're doing this away from home all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And Luke Shaw says we need to prepare better against teams like this, which people took to mean he meant everyone there, players and coach and staff. The one real chance they had was Brian Mbeumo being put through 1-on-1 by Cunha, which was a decent save. That was really it. Like, Paddy McNair actually shadowed him, so he kind of made it more difficult for him. But I think, Keith, if you struggle at the back and then you don't create up front, no matter what day of the season it is, no matter who you have out there, that's the major worry. Because if you struggle at both ends...
Yeah, and they didn't just struggle at both ends, they struggled in the middle. I thought Santos and Tielemans looked like two new players trying to get a grip of a new team. And the more I look at that Manchester United squad, I'm not so sure how good they are, to be completely honest with you. I mean, there's people there. I mean, Dorgu... I like Dorgu, but has he got the consistency? I mean, he came into the club as a left back and he ended up playing really well as a left winger or inverted left winger, left forward, whatever you want to call him. But I think consistency is the big one with Dorgu. Can he play well for the majority of a Premier League season? Can he stay injury free? Lenny Yoro, potentially, he looks like a very, very good centre half. But for the here and now, is he ready to play 38 games in the Premier League at a high, high level? I'm not so sure, but I'm willing to say 2-3 years, he could be absolutely brilliant. Andre Santos, as I said, 27 games for Chelsea. Mason Mount, never fit. So, you know, that's the big question mark over him. Ugarte is just a no for me. Not good enough for Manchester United. Anyway. Yeah. I know he's injured, but even when he comes back, he's not good enough. Šeško, huge question mark. Xerxes, huge question mark. So, it's a very, you know, you're down to probably 12, 13, 14 players that you go, yeah, I like them. Then the level drops off, and as I say, Champions League football, I think they're going to struggle. I think they'll struggle to maintain a Premier League, Champions League race and compete in the Champions League. And I don't like Carrick's talking. It's very uninspired. We didn't get out for. We had plenty of passion. So what? You just got outplayed by Hull, did you?
It's the type of management that if you're winning, people praise how composed you are. And if you're losing, you have no passion.
Mm. Yeah, but you can't. Everybody, I still expect Hull to go down this season, but they've just rolled over Manchester United opening game of the season.
Are you that surprised? I mean, really?
I would say I'm surprised. Just I look at the two teams on paper and think Manchester United are a much better team. So if United work as hard as Hull, United should win the game. Mm. And I think that's the first part of college. Did they work as hard as Hull? I don't think they did. And that's why they got beaten. And I know balls into the box, set pieces, is if you can't defend set pieces into your box, you're going to struggle. If you can't score at the other end of the park, you're going to struggle. But even the Rashford stuff, he comes on and he's like, yeah, he did okay, he didn't do anything wrong, but he was good at Barcelona. He's not exactly good at Manchester United, and I'm not sure if he wants to be there. And if he doesn't want to be there, just move on, because I'm getting a bit bored of the whole Rashford thing now. Either go and really play well for Manchester United or move on, because you're too good to just be, you know, going stale at a club.
There's two sides of it, the whole thing as well, in that it's very easy for them to get up for a game like this. They're at home, surprise package, even getting promoted. The team itself is pretty much the same as the one that came up last year. They have a different goalkeeper, a different centre-half, but outside of that, it's essentially the same team that got them up for the time being. I imagine that will change over the next couple of weeks. So from United's perspective, you look at that and go, okay, well, we know what we're coming up against here. There's no real excuse of... This is a complete and utter unknown in that they've signed 8 different players and there could be anything. Mm. Like, you know what you're going to be playing against, and you, by right, by logic, everyone on paper would suggest that you have got better players and you've had the entire summer to go and get this right, and they haven't done that.
Well, let's put our first official rankings in here. So Manchester United clearly had a bad weekend, so they're going into the bottom tier of the performance rankings this week. Hull City... Newly promoted Hull City, go into the S tier, because that, you know, a 2-0 win over Manchester United on the opening day back in the Premier League, nobody expects you to get anything. I think that's deserving of the S tier. We'll move on to the next game. High scoring game, this one, and a lot of Irish interest in it. Brentford 3, Tottenham Hotspur 0. Could have been 4-0. Igor Thiago with a poor penalty. I think you can always say a penalty that doesn't actually hit the target is a poor penalty. So it was a poor penalty for me. But Brentford, Really, really impressive here, Colin.
Yeah, and like that's not that surprising. At the same time, Brentford, like that's very much in keeping what they did last season with Keith Andrews. It is amazing. I was thinking back to the first day of last season for Brentford. Do you remember what it was? Do you remember how it went?
Yeah, they got hammered by Nottingham Forest.
Nottingham Forest. That was five managers ago for Forest.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing what's changed in 12 months. This new guy, Mamadou Sangare in midfield, £39 million from Lens. Excellent.
Yeah.
As I was saying to you, it's going to be depressing when Chelsea sign him next year.
Yeah, yeah, and he goes on to do nothing. But did I read somewhere Keith Andrews is like the ninth longest serving manager in the Premier League now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he would, because Marco Rosa was the 12th longest serving last Friday.
And he got a point, isn't it? 2 months ago.
And had to manage the game. But for, I mean, like, if you want to talk from the Spurs perspective, like, Jesus Christ. I mean, like, it's just like, you can't tell the difference between Spurs and United over the years. Like, Spurs 17th 2 years in a row, fair enough, so they're probably worse, like, but they do have Europa League, in fairness. Archie Gray was captain. You know, this kid, this right back who wasn't in the team at the end of last season, but is actually part of Roberto De Zerbi's new leadership group at Spurs that was announced last week, and he happened to be the only one of the leaders on the pitch. So default, he was Spurs' captain, which made him Tottenham's youngest ever skipper.
Yeah. Can I put one point across as the defence of Spurs? Might be a little bit, I might be being a little bit too kind to them here. That front five that they played yesterday, or front four, let's say, is not the front four that's going to be playing for the rest of the season. Mikey Moore is not going to be starting for Spurs. Conor Gallagher is not going to be starting as like a number 10 creative. And I don't think Richarlison will be in the team by the end of 3 weeks' time, potentially. So you could say that their bluntness was down to that, but that's not why they lost the game. They lost the game because they were an absolute carnage at the back, which I think, like, on paper, Robertson, Senesi, Van Hecke and Gray, it's an okay defence. You wouldn't say it's world-beating, but it's certainly not the mess that it was yesterday.
Mm.
However, I think you have to give Brentford credit here. As much as Spurs were a mess, I think the story here is actually how much better Brentford look than even last year. Like, they did really well last year, but last season started in a mess for Keith Andrews, and it looked like it was going exactly to the script of, oh, they give it to him too soon, it's going to end in disaster. And he picked up pace, but then, like, that Brentford performance, it was a top team.
The Brentford goal, the first goal, is unbelievable to watch on the eye. It's incredible. Pass and move, everything about it is excellent. But if you go and watch that back from a Spurs perspective, and Roberto De Zerbi's teams that have been lauded for their press, that was the whole thing. The playing out from the back and the press was that's what he was known for at Brighton, when things were going so well. Not one of those Spurs players gets within anywhere near the vicinity of any Brentford player who touches the ball in that move. And for the finish itself from Keane Lewis Potter, he's in an acre of space. Now, again, he does well to peel off the defender, but it's scandalously bad from Spurs' point of view. So 100% credit for Brentford is absolutely warranted, but I'd be concerned about Spurs. I would, and that's what De Zerbi had to say himself after that. He made the point that after the Hoffenheim game we played in pre-season, I realised we're not ready for the Premier League season, which is mental, because they've essentially had the whole summer.
Yeah. Quibin Kelleher made his first save in this game in the 49th minute when Spurs were 3-0 down. And then afterwards, Roberto De Zerbi, as is in character with the man, was very honest. And basically said, look, this is not the team you're going to see in a few weeks, basically, like, don't worry about it. But he also admitted it is quite concerning. Interestingly, in one of his post-match interviews, he name-checked three of the new signings being not fit at all. There were two centre-halves, Senesi and Van Hecke, obviously with Premier League experience, and the other guy, the midfielder, Newcastle star Tonali, not fit enough. So maybe they'll put it down as an aberration and they'll move on. But it is in keeping what you'd expect from Spurs. They have this in them. Who was the worst starter of the two, United or Spurs? Who are you more concerned about, Keith?
I'd say I'm more concerned about Spurs. Although what Enda says is right, I think Savinho and I think Marmoush will end up there over the next couple of days, and that front three will be totally different. I expect Tonali to become an awful lot better, and I expect Senesi and Van Hecke to get up to the pace of the Premier League pretty quickly. I know they've got Premier League experience, but, you know, the centre-half relationship takes a while to get together, and I'm not so sure Robertson will keep his place as the left-back. I think Udogie will probably fire himself in. Now, I like Udogie. I think he's better going forward. He's probably a better footballer. Robertson is probably a better 1v1 defender. So it may be horses for courses, considering who they're playing. I expect them to get an awful lot better, and I was talking to a couple of Spurs fans, and Vicario going out on loan, I think Vicario's better than Kinski.
Yeah, well, that's interesting you bring up Kinski, because Kinski is mentioned in the comments. You know, Spurs won't do much with Kinski in goal. And we asked Martin Lipton on the show on Friday about that. I was saying, with Vicario going, I was like, who's the goalkeeper? And I was like, that's Kinski.
Yeah.
The Zerbi's a big fan. I was like, Jesus, Kinski, like, he's had a tough 2026, let alone that game.
They've Van de Ven and Porro to come back as well. So they are missing a lot of players. Madison, too, got a little bit of a run out.
Madison looked a little bit lightweight, didn't he? Like, I know he had a really bad injury. You would expect him to be in the gym for the majority of that time. Is he not lifted a weight at all that time? Like, he got manhandled a few times, just thrown around like a rag doll. Look, I expect him to get better. The save from Quiving Kenneher, there was, I think Mikey Moore had three chances towards the end of the first half. There was one where it's on the left wing and it works its way over to the right wing. One. And he just hits it with his right foot, and you think, that's a real weak finish. There was no intensity or meaning. It was just, just passes to the goalkeeper. The third one, I think he comes in and wallops it, and Quiving makes a brilliant save. But I'd expect an awful lot more from Spurs moving forward. I think De Zerbi is a brilliant man manager. I think he's an excellent tactician. And when he gets his proper starting 11, it will become better. But not like sound bites that they're not ready for the season. Tonali's not quite fit. They're worrying signs. They're not good teams, because the season has started now. And if you're not fit, you're going to be scrambling to try and get your fitness.
It's funny, because like, if one team says they're not fit yet, most people are, fine. And then the other team that just hammered them.
Yeah.
So where are they?
Does he mean sharp rather than fit?
Yeah, but you can always, like, it's a very handy one after day one. And we're not fit yet. And then and then a lot of people forgive that. You see it in the comments this morning. So people saying, it's lazy journalism to write someone off after one game. It's like, we're just analysing what we saw. And then someone else in the comments, don't worry, it's only one game in. And then someone else in the comments would be like, this is terrible. This is an absolute disaster going forward.
But I don't like the Michael Carrick, don't worry, it's only one game. Because that can creep in, and it's only one game, or he doesn't really drop the hammer when we lose. It's not going to get much worse. There's no away game that would be a worse loss than Hull away from Manchester United this season.
You're fully entitled to be worried after one game if you see a trend coming.
Yeah.
Because you're like, that's what people see as analysts. It's like, you got to stop a trend.
Every team watching that whole game the other day against United would be thinking, they can't defend balls into the box. So the one weakness that you smell, everybody else has smelled it and be thinking, that was there last season as well. So now United, I think, we don't like balls into the box. Everybody else knows now, you don't like balls into the box. So the two centre-halves, the goalkeeper, are going to become under more and more pressure. And I'm not sure. I don't see United having a brilliant season this season. You know, 7-8 and maybe, last 16 quarterfinals of the Champions League would be a decent season.
I think to answer your question, Colm, you'd be more worried about Spurs, because what happened to Spurs were they picked apart on the pitch, whereas Man United conceded two goals from set pieces. That's something you can fix pretty quickly if necessary. And you look, a draw against Hull City at the opening game of the season isn't ideal either, but it's definitely better than a 2-0 loss. So, you know, if I'm looking at this on paper, Spurs, you can say, more positive because they have loads of players to come back. Man United, easier to fix in terms of what they conceded. So in terms of the actual rankings here for this one, we're obviously putting Brentford into the S tier because they're phenomenal. And Spurs fall into the same category as Manchester United on the bottom of the performance rankings. We'll move on really quickly to two games. We don't need to spend too much time on them because we will be getting to them later on in the show. So Liverpool and Arsenal. We'll start with the Arsenal one. Opening day of the season. Coventry City, could be a slippery one. They stick it away, no problem at all. That was an easy win for Arsenal. They made it look like light work. And it was light work for them. You expect the champions to beat the newly promoted side in the first day of the season, but it doesn't always happen. I think Arsenal deserve credit for being really, really solid and just continuing on from the Community Shield. They go into the good tier here, the G tier. And then Liverpool, 2-0 or 2-2 draw with Newcastle yesterday. And it took them until the 90 plus 6th minute to get that. Fantastic finish, though, for the penalty, it must be said, from Dominic Szoboszlai. What do we think of Liverpool here? They weren't bad. They weren't great. Wirtz and Isak weren't very good overall, you have to say. And if you're looking at Liverpool, what are the signs that Liverpool are going to be like in the first start of the season? Maybe very, very open to the counter-attack. Or maybe Newcastle are very good at the counter-attack.
I think a lot of the suspicions we had before the weekend were that there would be certain teams who have got their house in order, being Arsenal, and that's about it. Mm. And everyone else was liable to kind of do anything. And I think that's sort of where we are. I would interpret the Zerbe's comments of them not being fit or that kind of stuff as them not being ready, in that he has an idea of where he wants the team to be and they're not where he wants them to be right now for a multitude of reasons, and perhaps fitness levels are one of those things. Arsenal look like a team who are ready to pick up where they left off and did that with flying colours. Were very good. Solis looked excellent, far better than I think a lot of people might have anticipated. Looks like a serious upgrade on both Martinelli and Trossard based off of what we've seen over the last little while. Listen, he's played one game in the Premier League. We'll leave that open, but he looks very good. As far as Liverpool go, I would have them somewhere in between both. They played okay. They were grand. They look like they're missing a wee bit of firepower, I would say. And they look open at the back. They look susceptible to counter-attacks. They've got a pretty new defence as far as Jacquet coming in and Frimpong and Kirkez being their two fullbacks, which is grand. They're good players, but they're far better going forward than they are going backwards. Kirkez got absolutely skint by Anthony Elanga, but that's Anthony Elanga at his best. And I wonder if that kind of kamikaze style of football that Iriola plays might leave them open against maybe some of the teams that, especially when they go away from home, some of the teams that are all right with sitting in and springing, because Newcastle created an awful lot of chances yesterday, despite the fact I didn't think they were brilliant themselves.
I find it strange with Iriola. I know what he wants to do. I know the way he played at Bournemouth. I know he's going to try and do that at Liverpool. But the opening game of the season, away to Newcastle, you don't have to be a genius to think, well, Newcastle's strength is going to be on the counter. They're going to be extremely quick on the wings. So I tell you what, for the opening 20 minutes, why don't our fullbacks stay at home? Why don't we just really keep it nice and tight and give Newcastle nothing, get the crowd down a bit, let it all calm down. 1-0 down in 5 minutes, counter-attacked. Unbelievable. And again, this is how Iriola goes about it. Have a look at the opposition. Have a look at what they're strong at. Take that into account and nullify it. Like, the opening 5 minutes, Cullum, you don't just go, this is how we're going to play from minute one to minute 90. There's different moments in the game. There's different fields. There's different pressures. There's different atmospheres with the crowd. The opening game of the season at St James's Park in the first 5 minutes, how are you getting counter-attacked? That shouldn't be happening. You've got to be a little bit cleverer. But look, I don't think there's going to be an awful lot of teams that Newcastle will be able to counter-attack in St James's. So I think when teams come and they play a low block in St James's, that's where I will judge Newcastle. But when you look at that, I was initially a little bit worried about Newcastle with Eddie Howe and a whole host of bodies leaving the building. But with Elanga, Vissa, Barnes and Asula up front as the front four, they look really good. Malik Chaud and Botman are two very good centre-halves for me. I'm not sure about the two number sixes. And if Lewis Hall stays in the building, that's a big, big plus, because I know Manchester United are flirting with him as well. But from a Liverpool point of view, the first thing I did was when I looked at that starting 11 was thought, Ngamoa right wing, Frimpong right back. Massive weakness. That right side is just calling out to be milked out of it. I mean, Ngamoa is a very, very good player, but he's not going to play 38 games in the Premier League and the Champions League campaign. Frimpong, as Matthew says, is very good going forward. Not very big at defending the back post in terms of his stature. And he's often caught high up the pitch. So Szoboszlai, Gravenberch, McAllister, whoever's in the middle of the park, is constantly going to be having to check over their right shoulder and fill that hole. And Jacquet, the new centre-half coming in, he must be constantly looking to the right and going, where's my right back? Just constantly up the pitch. I expect it to get better. I think Gakpo was Liverpool's best player yesterday. Scored a really good goal. But you go back 48 hours and they're flirting about him leaving the building to go to Spurs as well, which is crazy given that Salah has left and you're thinking, oh yeah, Gakpo can go as well. They need to keep him in. And I'm glad Andy have highlighted Florian Wirtz, because I've been highlighting him now for since he came in the building at Liverpool. I don't think he's been anywhere near good enough, and there's little moments and little flashes, little 30 second highlights where people go, Keith, there, isn't that brilliant? That's not enough for me. The game is not played on social media where you watch a quick little flick and go, wasn't that brilliant? In the 90 minute game, he's not contributing enough. I think his XG assist was 0.04 yesterday.
Yeah,
that's his main strength.
There was a hope that he'd flourish in the 10 under Areola, but if anyone did it all for Liverpool yesterday at St James' Park, it was probably Cody Gakpo in those 5 minutes, because he actually got in that pocket just before he scored the goal as well. He did that twice, where he found space, acres of space, that Newcastle weren't picking him up, and he actually wasn't even subtle about it. He was calling for the ball to his feet, almost annoyed at his teammates. I think it was that Gravenberch who played that lovely
through
ball into him for the goal, and then they stood off him massively. So if anyone at all, it was a guy who's linked away from the football club who actually is the most effective 10 on yesterday's viewing.
Yeah, very possibly. I like McAllister in the 10. I know he's very good in the 6 as well, can put his foot in and link the play. I like McAllister in the 10. Even Munoz, when he came off the bench and won the penalty, he looked okay. I can see, if I was Lewis Hall, I'd be annoyed that the penalty was given, because it did seem a little bit soft. But again, if I'm Munoz running into the 18-yard box, I'm screaming that that's a penalty. So I see why it's given. Possibly a little bit soft. Araujo coming off the bench as well will add to that Liverpool defence. But even the levels of Van Dijk, I mean, when we talk about Kerkez and Frimpong going and committing to the attacks, Van Dijk is going to be exposed 1v1 an awful lot as well. And for me, he's not the player he was 2 years ago. He's getting older all the time, and doesn't commit into tackles. You know, he doesn't go and engage with people, stays very, very loose and allows them to get their head up and do what they want. So needs to be an awful lot of improvement, but it's difficult to see past Arsenal, and I'm very weird that I'm an Arsenal fan here. But
I think you might be onto something there. Was like, how much can you tell, not even after round one, 90% of the first round of games, instead of the London Derby, maybe still Fulham-Chelsea. So maybe Chelsea will wait and see then. But like, it is basically like, after one game, it's like, yeah, Arsenal probably going to win the league here. On this showing, on this one sample.
I think, but you would have said that before a ball was kicked as well in the Premier League.
Nothing's changed from that first weekend.
To be fair, the only thing that's changed, probably City have gone down in my estimation. When you take the Community Shield and you take in their last minute win against Bournemouth, I think it's been underwhelming. I know Maresca, and it's going to get better, and Rodri, but I don't think they look as strong as they need to.
Can you turn that around and say it's a sign of champions to play poorly and win?
Yeah, but I think it's more they got out of jail. Gehi playing in the 6 didn't help for me. People are putting an awful lot of weight into Bawadi coming in and being the next Rodri. And by the way, what's Nico Gonzalez thinking? I know Maresca said he's not quite 100%, but when you look and you go, it's a centre-half playing in my position.
Well, he is linked with Newcastle.
What's he thinking? £100 million player, and on the Friday before the game kicks off, Mark Gehi, the manager, is saying, the centre-half, he's going to pop into midfield and you're going to give him the ball and he's going to start playing. What have you signed me for? Just to kick people and win the ball back?
It was a movable feast, wasn't it? With all the players. He dropped into centre half without the ball, with the ball in possession, centre mid. Elliot Anderson back at centre half.
And look, Gehi did okay. He won the ball back and passed left and right. He didn't really do an awful lot wrong, but in terms of penetrative passes forward, he should have scored a header. I think Phil in commentary called it a sitter.
It was a sitter.
He's 2 yards out, just needs a good contact. He redeems himself with the equaliser, but in terms of playing in the 6, I think Gehi said in the interview after that it worked in the end. I would say they got away with it in the end.
What tier are Liverpool?
Liverpool are going to the average tier, because I don't think it's bad enough to merit a bad, but it's not good enough to merit a good either. So they go into the average tier. That's us.
Where would you put it? Haaland's hair.
Top of the list. I like it.
Yeah.
Good. Took years off him.
And Don Ballard, if there's a new tier that we can invent for his goal for Bristol City against Birmingham City. If you haven't seen 86 minutes, it was actually looked like it was going to be the winner. And Birmingham got a penalty deep into stoppage time. Yeah. If you haven't seen Don Ballard's goal, create a social media account for yourself.
It's outrageous.
Just look it up.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I was in Sligo on Friday and I was getting the train back Saturday morning and a fella said to me, Keith, did you see Alex Murphy's goal for Kaiserslautern on the weekend? I said, I didn't, no. And he said, you'll have to watch it. It's an absolute cracker. I still haven't seen it. Has anybody seen Alex Murphy's goal?
Alex Murphy, Leverkusen?
Yeah.
All right, let us know in the comments.
No, Kaiserslautern.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.